one of the things that I recommend to people whenever they have skin problems, and this is going to sound a little goofy, but really it works, is watching sad movies. Because the sadness, when it's held inside of our body, affects the lung. It affects the digestive system. We can't allow things to pass over us. If we're feeling sad, that emotion really takes priority over everything else. And so when we allow that letting go process to happen, and crying is one of the best ways to do it. And sometimes people need a little help to cry.
Hey, beautiful. This is Aminata Soul Plant Walker Firewoman, and I am the host of the Mother Tree Network, where spirituality and earth wisdom meet racial justice and women's leadership.
Hey, gorgeous. I'm recording this introduction to this episode on November 1st. So happy Halloween. Happy Samhain. I think I'm saying it correctly. Happy end of effing October. Wow. It has been a brutal one with all that's going on in that part of the world we call the Middle East. Big changes in my own life. Just a time of grief. And this episode is really helpful, because we are featuring Dr. Sina Smith. And Dr. Sina, who is an expert in traditional Chinese medicine and is an MD and a former surgeon, tells us that fall is a time for crying. And when you cry in the fall, when you let the tears flow, you are setting yourself up to have some good healing and repair in the winter. Which of course then means you have the energy to grow new things and to, you know, sprout in the spring. So it is all good. If you are feeling like you want to cry, if you've been fighting tears, I'm here to tell you it feels so much better when you let them flow. And anger. We're in Scorpio season. So if you got some anger, which, you know, who amongst us doesn't, if you're human, this is the time to release that anger. So this episode is my gift to you for the fall. In it, Dr. Sina tells us about how to align ourselves with this fall season. What are some of the gifts of fall for us? She talks about why shiitake mushrooms are a must-have food in the fall. She even gives us a couple of tips on how to make yourself cry, even if you're someone who has a hard time crying, because crying is so healthy. We also talk about listening. Dr. Sina's tagline for her practice is where healing begins with being heard. Healing begins with being heard. How true is that? One of the things that I've been doing in the Mother Tree community is offering something called sacred listening sessions. And that's where we spend half an hour using this very efficient but gentle method to listen deeply to your highest self, to an aspect of the divine, to the earth, to whatever it is that is your go-to, your rock. I've been creating sacred listening sessions, and I invite you to sign up for one. They're free, and the intention is that you listen for a deeper internal level of authority that is far wiser than any of the mass media, any of the people who are, you know, coming at you via social media. Sacred listening session. So if you want to sign up for one, you can just go to my website, dramandakemp.com, and you'll see a link for a sacred listening session. So, but let's talk about this episode. Dr. Sina Smith has been on the show before, where she told us a little bit more of her personal story. And in this episode, we really focus on what you can do to cultivate health inside of you. And it does begin by listening to yourself, listening to your body. And working with healthcare healing professionals who respect and listen to you. So without further ado, please go ahead and come into the conversation with me and Dr. Sina Smith. I'll see you on the other side. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Mother Tree Network, Dr. Sina Smith. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much, Aminata, for having me today. I'm really delighted to be back.
Yeah, I was telling you earlier that you're my first repeat guest.
Yes, I'm so excited about that.
I am too. And I think what the reason why I wanted you to come is because, you know, your personal story was very moving to people. You're like in the top, I don't know, 9 downloads for this podcast all time. So your story was very moving to people. And you had such great practical advice about how to, you know, last time you talked about how to flow into spring. And so I wanted you to come back to talk to us about fall going into winter. Because you have such a great, traditional Chinese medicine offers us such a rich perspective of what the seasons are and what they mean to our bodies and our spirits and our minds. And I love the way you explain things. You're very methodical.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been teaching for over 25 years. So
Then it is no mistake. You've been honing this ability to convey information and learning for a long time.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you for your kind words. I really appreciate it. And I really am delighted to be back. Yeah, I think, you know, in moving from kind of conventional medicine into East Asian medicine, one of the things that I was just really struck with is how it comes out of naturalistic observation of the world. And so it's not by some happenstance that this particular channel system goes with this particular time of year, which goes with this particular flavor. Like, they really paid attention over 2,500 years to what was happening in people's bodies that was in harmony with the natural environment and so forth. So it never ceases to blow me away how rich and how deep the understanding is.
And
so
I would imagine
last time we were kind of, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I would imagine that as you live and as you practice this medicine and this philosophy, you just get more and more subtle understandings of it. Like, if it's a 2,000-year-old yes. tradition, there's no way that even if you've been practicing for 20 years that you've got it.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like with conventional medicine, we're constantly saying, oh, we thought it was like this, but it's actually like this. You know, we thought what you needed was a good bloodletting, but actually we now know that there are bacteria that are causing that problem. So it's much more, you know, oh, well, we're now going to really reverse directions. And in East Asian medicine, so I would say Ayurveda, Chinese medicine, Unani medicine, like all those kind of ancient traditions, there is some pivoting and there is some, say, development of new understanding and new ways of doing things, but it's all true. It's not disproven. It's that you can look at it from this framework or you can look at it from this framework. So as you said, it really just creates a richness that we don't really have the concept for in conventional medicine.
This is making me think of a quote where the person said, you know, the opposite of a fact could be a lie, but the opposite of a truth could be another truth. Like, there's something paradoxical about the world, reality, you know what I mean? It's so anyway, that's what that is. And that was probably Eastern inspired.
Yeah. One of the things that drove me the most insane when I was moving from surgery, which is extremely precise, into East Asian medicine was this concept called the San Jiao. San means three, and a Jiao is like a heater or a burner. And so one of the names for this thing is San Jiao. Another is triple heater. Another is triple burner. And there's all kinds of permutations of those phrases. And I kept thinking, like, they can't even decide what to name the thing. How can they define it?
Yeah.
And now I think, wow, what hubris to think that that was actually problematic. It's actually elegant that there are so many different ways of conceptualizing this. And it goes with the Chinese language too, you know, which is pictographic. So you have an image and you're trying to put words onto an image. You have a concept and you're trying to limit it with words. So it's just a very, very different paradigm. And that goes into all the different components that make up the medicine. There are many, many ways of looking at it. So if you're looking at the same room from the window, from the door, from the wall, from the bed, you know, wherever you are is going to give you a different perspective on the same room. And they're all simultaneously true. So it's much less Newtonian and much more quantum physics, you know, Einsteinian kinds of concepts that we're getting into even in medicine now. It's really fascinating.
Yeah. And as you were talking, that's immediately what I thought. I thought about the dominant paradigm, it seems, that we're in is in the yes or no, like the binary dualistic paradigm. And what you're talking about is multiple, you know, multiplicity, right? And I was thinking about, you know, I had this healing experience with this healer who's an anthropologist, who's Hindu from India, who's using an ancient Japanese, really very not widely known technique, practice, way of life. And one of the things we got to in my healing was one of the constraints of monotheism is like, if there's only one God, then that usually follows there's only one right way. Yeah. You know what I mean? It gets very exclusive. And that's sort of built into this paradigm.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is, yeah, it's the way that surgery is practiced. You either operate or you don't. You either cut here or you cut somewhere else. There's not a lot of, even in like family practice, you can try this medicine for a few months and then we'll try a different one if this doesn't work. You know, you kind of have this second chance sort of a thing. But where my head was whenever I transitioned into integrative medicine was like, okay, I'm making a yes or no decision with literally every medical decision that I'm either doing for the patient or on behalf of the patient or with the patient. And now it's like, I have so many different tools in my toolbox. I can say, well, we can address this with diet. We can talk about herbs. We can talk about lifestyle modifications. We can do some Qigong. We can do some homeopathy. We can, you know, there's just so many different options and all of them will facilitate healing for the person. So then it becomes a conversation where, okay, now we're working together and we're creating a harmonized approach that have the person at the center. Instead of the doctor being the director and kind of this hierarchical structure, it's now like, okay, Aminata, what would you like your health for? What does health look like to you? How can I facilitate your healing in a way that feels good to you instead of that feels bossy, you know, or controlling? How can I help you to feel the most empowered in your own healthcare journey? And it's honestly, it's one of the most transformative components of the way that I practice medicine now. I absolutely love it. It makes me feel happy and inspired and collaborative to not be bossing somebody else's body around all the time, to really just work with them and love on them in that way.
Mm. And I'm supposing that you have, the way you structure your practice is you do have time to love people.
Yes. Yeah. I get to spend an hour and a half initially just sitting and listening and then kind of tell the story of what I heard from the patient back to them so they can correct me if I've gotten anything wrong or fill in any gaps or any other pieces that, you know, have come to mind as we've been talking. And then we work on creating a framework and a plan together. Like, do we need to do some testing? Do we need to do this? What would you like to do? How do you want to start? Yeah. So it's so fulfilling as a clinician, and the feedback that I get is that it's really fulfilling as a patient too, because they get to be, everybody wants to be heard, you know, and everybody wants to understand. Where healing begins with being heard is my tagline, and that's really comes from my heart. That's my orientation.
Can you say that again? What is your tagline?
Where healing begins with being heard.
Oh, wow. Hey, today's episode is sponsored by DrAmandaKemp.com, my business. And I want to invite you to download a free gift. I've put together something called the 5 signs it's time to slow down your social justice or your racial justice. And basically, it's a little sheet so that you can check and see, do I need to slow down what I'm doing and what you can do instead? So go ahead over to DrAmandaKemp.com, to my website, and you will see an option to download that cheat sheet for 5 signs it's time to slow down your racial justice or your social justice. Thanks for listening. Whew. Well, we are recording this show October the 20th, you know, and there's so much pain and, you know, war and going on, and just what you said, we're healing begins with being heard. Yeah. Yeah. I wish more of that for every single one of us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So much suffering comes from people not feeling that they're being listened to, not being understood. Mm-hmm. And then they just get louder and louder, mm-hmm. or have to, in some right. cases, get louder and louder in order to yeah. be heard and understood and honored.
And it's like our bodies do the same thing, right? Little yes. subtle things, and we don't listen. And then the disorders have to get bigger and bigger, huh?
Yeah, that is certainly, yes, absolutely. That is certainly what has happened in my own personal life, in the lives of many of my friends and family, and certainly in the lives of many, many patients, where we're just not taught, I think, in our culture to communicate and to listen to ourselves either. Certainly not now in the age of social media, where we're constantly putting our projection of ourself out there and then receiving the feedback on the projection of ourself. So we're not really allowing that vulnerability to say, this is really what I think inside, you know, or we don't do as much meditation and internal work to learn what is it that I really think and believe in my own self before we start having conversations about it. Mm-hmm. So we lose track of that.
Yes.
And that shows up in our bodies too. You know, I really need to go to bed at night. Well, but my significant other likes to stay up for another hour. So I will stay up another hour with them. Mm-hmm. And so over the long term, that messes with somebody's sleep schedule, which then raises cortisol levels, messes with melatonin. When cortisol goes up, then our blood sugars don't work very well. Then we start to gain weight in ways that we don't particularly want. You know, we start developing high hemoglobin A1C. Our blood sugars go up. We develop diabetes. That helps to create inflammation in the body, lays down plaques. Now all of a sudden we have heart disease, and it's because we're not going to bed. You know, if we just listen to our bodies and go to bed when the body wants to go to bed, eat fruits and vegetables when the body is craving that instead of what's quick and easy, you know, at McDonald's on the way home. Mm-hmm. The more we listen to our bodies, the more wisdom there is and the more longevity and health we have.
Mm. Well, what's a nice, easy way to start listening to your body? Like, what can you tell us something concrete that we could do?
That's a great question. I think one of the most important things, and I'm on a little bit of a sleep bandwagon at the moment, but listening to when you start feeling tired. Mm. And even if that is a little earlier than you're ready to go to bed at night, then allowing yourself some quiet time to sit in your bedroom, read, meditate, journal, do some of those kind of calming down activities before bed. But even in the daytime, studies, whenever they evaluate people that take naps, not not really long naps over the course of the day, but even just a 10 minute or a 15 minute, close your eyes, you know, turn off the phone, sit for a few minutes and just allow yourself to recover. All of the stress hormones go down. Your HSCRP, your glucocorticoids, like all the fancy acronyms for all the chemical messengers in your body that are associated with stress, all of that comes down. And we're not really designed to be in fight or flight all day long. We're supposed to have heart rate variability. It's supposed to go up when we're moving around, and then it's supposed to come back down whenever we're more sedentary. And so it's the heart rate variability that really gives your body the ability to adapt to different things that are being thrown at you over the course of the day, or to deal with big stressors and small stressors as they come forward. So if we practice that downtime, then we have room to go up a little bit. If we're already at an 8 out of 10 all day long, we can only go between 8 and 10. You know, if we bring ourselves back down to a 3 at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, then there's some wiggle room and we're not so hypervigilant when we're trying to then move into the yin time of the 24 hour cycle, which is the evening.
Yes. And you know, if I don't rest during the day, I can't sleep well later that night. It's like I do have to build it in, I'm noticing. Some downtime. You know, I do yoga nidra, so I really just turn other things off and just focus on the voice telling me what to do.
Yeah.
That's a really good, thank you. So everybody, you heard her say, when you get tired, find a way to rest. And really,
yeah, and it doesn't mean that. Yeah, it doesn't mean that if you've got, you know, little kids running around, obviously you can't take a nap while they're awake. But, you know, sitting on the floor with them, reading a book is a much more parasympathetic, you know, kind of rest type of activity than going out to the playground. And so listening to your own intuition, as well as the little people that you're raising or the adult people that you're around at the office.
And also, you know, when your little kid is napping, you nap too, or rest, or, you know, if they don't nap, just give them some quiet time so you can. I used to do that. I used to be like, mommy needs quiet time. Okay, maybe you're not going to nap. But I need to walk away. So talk to us about the fall. Give us some understanding about the fall season. What's good for us in the fall?
So the summer is all about outward movement, right? We get outside, we're running around outside. The plants and the trees are all flowering. They're putting their energy out. They're putting their energy into creating fruit. They're, you know, everything is growing and outward. The fall then is about the beginning of that retraction back to the time of being the seed, which is the winter time. So it's about letting go. And I think about that metaphorically and also, you know, naturalistically. The leaves and the trees are doing this. If they don't let go of their leaves, they have the potential to truly have catastrophic things happen to themselves, right? In the wintertime when that cold weather comes, they have to let go of their leaves. And so fall is the emotion that goes with fall is grief and sadness, because it is about letting go of the things that we were clinging to. So that might be other people, that might be things in our closet, that might be things in our physical space, that might be work things, but it is the fall is about allowing those things to pass through us, that which is not serving, to be released and to let go. So the emotions that are the organ systems that go with the fall are the large intestine, because that's what the large intestine is doing, right? It's letting go. And then the lung, which is taking in the air and letting go of that which is not helpful. The fall is also the metal organ. So it goes with our skin. So a lot of people have skin problems that start to sort of show up in the fall if their metal system is not healthy. And one of the things that I recommend to people whenever they have skin problems, and this is going to sound a little goofy, but really it works, is watching sad movies. Because the sadness, when it's held inside of our body, affects the lung. It affects the digestive system. We can't allow things to pass over us. If we're feeling sad, that emotion really takes priority over everything else. And so when we allow that letting go process to happen, and crying is one of the best ways to do it. And sometimes people need a little help to cry.
Yes.
So moonlight, you know, a lot of those kinds of movies just really bring all the tears up. A lot of the Pixar movies, honestly, are great for that stuff too. You know, Inside Out is another one that is just really lovely at kind of getting to grief. And cleaning your emotional space. Crying allows us to have a new perspective, to kind of start changing directions. Mm. So that's one of the most important things that I recommend in the fall is have a couple good cries, because it helps you to clean things out so that then you're ready to do the deep investigative work of what is there in the wintertime. What I don't recommend is doing things like vision boarding or trying to project what is happening in the future. The fall is about turning in. So it's a time of like completion of projects from that, you know, Q3 corporate sort of perspective going into Q4, right? Mm. But bringing those 2023 goals to a close, thinking about how to create completion for yourself, et cetera. It's not the time to start new stuff. It's the time to finish up the projects that you started over the course of the year or things that you were working on over the summer.
I want to go back to what you said about fall being a time, tears being a great way to let go, to create space, but you have to let go to create the space. And you said for skin problems, how does that relate to skin problems?
Yeah, sorry, I did kind of gloss over that a little bit, didn't I? So the metal system has organs, has channels, has a time of year, has an emotion, and also has a tissue type. And so metal is about how we protect ourselves from the outside. So our skin is one of the ways that we protect ourselves from the outside. And it's how we kind of define what is self versus non-self. I start here where my skin is. And then everything outside of my skin is not me, and everything inside of my skin is me. So when you think about, we'll put it in this way, in the passage of time, the reason that we think that we honor time or that we honor people in our lives is because our time on this planet is limited. People become precious because we only have this weekend together. Or we're getting together for dinner or something along those lines. So it's the passage of time that allows us to honor the relationship that we're having or our mother's role in our life or our father's role in our life, everything that along those lines. So when we think about the fall and the letting go, it's also the grief and sadness that comes with letting go of a parent or a grandparent when they've passed away and releasing that and kind of, I don't want to say brushing that off of our skin, but allowing it to pass through us instead of holding on to us in an inappropriate way. Mm-hmm. So skin eruptions, acne and eczema and all that kind of thing come to the surface because the body is trying to get rid of them and it can't quite push it from a Chinese medicine perspective, all the way out. So it gets it out as far as it can go. Mm-hmm. And so if we cry, if we allow ourselves to emote, if we allow ourselves to let go, then the body is able to push that. I'm just going to use the word toxin. I hate that word, but it's the most generic that I can think of, that problematic emotion or thing out of our system.
Mm-hmm. It's like washing. Like a washing.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And our eyes are our perspective on the world, right? Mm. So when we wash our eyes, we're able to see things in a different way. Mm.
And Dr. Sina, is it true that our tears have different chemical composition if we're crying from like grief or sadness versus if we're crying because something got in our eye, you know how, and we just start crying because it's just the eye is tearing up. Is it true that the emotion affects the composition?
I have not heard that, but I would not be surprised. I would not be surprised because the body is just so wise. And I wouldn't be surprised if there's a little bit more mucus, you know, that we're secreting, if there's something that we're trying to wash out as opposed to just the saline that's coming out, you know, that's just salt water. That's coming out when we have tears. But I can neither confirm nor deny that that is actually the case.
Well, I'll just tell you, when you said the mucus, not to gross anybody out, it's true. When I have more emotion, when these tears are about emotion, there's definitely mucus production, you know, all over the whole eye, throat, nose situation. So that makes sense. And I guess I just want us, I wanted us to hang out in this whole grief thing for a minute because, as you said, I think we've forgotten how to grieve. You know, I think so much of our to be successful, don't let them see you cry, you know, don't cry, I'll give you something to cry for. It's like some reason we just kind of just have this thing that tears are, I don't know, a waste of time or something.
Yeah. It is one of the things that has struck me so powerfully in watching both the Israeli and the Palestinian videos that I've been seeing, is especially the men crying. Because in our country, we have really made it not okay for people that identify as being male to express anything but anger. They're allowed to be mad. They're allowed to be frustrated. They're allowed to beat their chest. But when it comes to crying or grief, they're just not allowed to have that feeling. And I think because we prioritize male characteristics over female characteristics in this country, like you said, it has also been a thing where, you know, there is no crying in baseball, you know, like, and so we're suppressing our emotional health and our ability to express those emotions in many, many different facets. Crying is just... And it is one of the things that I feel like I have to recommend as a doctor.
Yes.
I use still a little bit of that hierarchy and say, like, no, this is really is good for you. And here's why. Here's why. It's critical to be able to feel sad about something and to say, this is invading me. This is, you know, overcoming my boundaries. This is pushing me to a place where I am uncomfortable, or this is about letting go of something and saying, okay, I can no longer have this person, this activity, this whatever in my life. I have a dear friend who broke her hip, and she was an avid bicycler and had 7 or 8 bicycles, you know, in her basement, and has had to let that go. So it doesn't even necessarily have to be a thing that is, you know, a job or a person, but that activity that she found so much love in. And there really was a deep grieving process that had to happen around that.
Yeah. And I know one of the important books that I've read that we talked about on the show is The Healing Wisdom of Africa, and by Maladoma Somé. And what he brought to United States and North America from West Africa were grieving rituals, because he noticed that, wow, we do not do grief. I mean, you know, even at funerals, people are supposed to be strong, quote, be strong, like you said. So I really appreciate you bringing that up now and giving us something very simple, like, okay, it's okay, go watch a movie. It's a sad movie, but this is going to help you do something for your body. And by washing it out, you'll get to see the situation a little bit differently. I just love that. That's what's possible if you let yourself go into grief.
Yeah.
Is that something that you've been able to do? Because I know you were really into surgery and Western medicine, and then you made this shift. How have you personally been able to apply this?
I think it comes off in onion layers. You know, some of the layers of the onion are thicker than others. But I left surgery in 2009. So it's been 14 years. In a couple of weeks, it will be 14 years since my arm first became problematic. And I think, you know, bodies, again, are so wise. And the Van der Kolk book about the body knows the score talks about some of the chronobiology, that the body knows the time of year whenever things are, or, you know, traumatic events have happened, and we're sort of reliving that time of year. So I always have kind of a little bit more pain in my right arm around that mid-November time. And then it goes away very quickly. But what I do whenever that starts to show up is, first of all, acknowledge it, instead of saying like, well, what's going on? Let me just take some ibuprofen and get rid of this. But listen to my body and say, okay, what's happening here? I usually do some journaling. I might look at some old pictures. I have still one of my lab coats from residency, and so I will sometimes take that out and just kind of take a look at it again and say goodbye to that part of me. I might chit chat with another woman who is a surgeon buddy of mine, to kind of just, well, where would I have been if I had stayed with that, etc. So I think for years I cried about it a lot in the very beginning. And then I tried to say, okay, this, I need to be done with this. I need to move forward, you know. But now I think I've reached kind of more of a happy medium, where I'm not trying to ignore it, but I'm also not dwelling on it. I don't feel actively sad anymore about losing that part of my life. But it is still something that, that was a traumatic event, that was a lot of work, that then I didn't really get to reap the benefits from all that hard work. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow. You just sound like a wise woman right there.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, at 52, I can get just a little, I'm starting to get just a little bit of Crohn's knowledge, right?
Yes. You're in the magic decade.
Exactly.
Beautiful. Yeah. We're going to take a break right here for to hear some words from our sponsors, and then we'll be right back.
This episode of the Mother Tree Network podcast is brought to you by my new book, Women Connected in Wisdom, Volume 2. I'm a contributing author to this beautiful collection of essays and stories by women who are sharing what we've learned in our lives. My essay is called Black Girl Mycelium Running, and I recommend you check it out. Found wherever you buy your books.
So, Dr. Sina, you were telling us all about, you know, metal, the lungs, the big intestines. I always want to know about food. So could you please tell us some good foods to eat now in the middle of fall, heading towards winter? What would you recommend we do with our bodies and food?
Absolutely. There are so many foods that I think about in the fall, in particular being good for all the viruses and the bacteria that we start passing around to each other when we start coming back to work after our summer vacations. And especially any little people that you happen to be living with who have classrooms full of other little germ factories, and then they bring those germs home. So the foods that I think about in the fall, number one, I would say, is shiitake mushrooms. They strengthen the immune system. They lower what's called CRP, one of the chemical messengers in your body that kind of deals with stress overall. And it increases something called your secretory IgA, which is an antibody that you secrete onto your mucous membranes. So that's in your nose, that's in your mouth, that's in your throat, that's in your digestive system. So because it supports that little chemical messenger of an immunoglobulin or an antibody, it binds to pathogens and prevents them from getting inside your body. And some of the lipopolysaccharide, again, another chemical component in the mushrooms, modulates the immune system responses in the gut and reverses age-related composition of the gut microbiome. And that's a lot of fancy jargon to say it helps with gut health overall. It helps with the bacteria and the yeast and so forth that are living in your digestive system that are actually helping and supporting your health overall. So shiitakes have antibacterial, antiviral, antifungal effects, and they also are anti-tumor because they're really high in vitamin D. They strengthen bones. They're really fantastic. So as a fall food, some shiitake action is a great way to go. And then I also recommend a couple of herbs, turmeric in particular. And
say that again.
Is the active turmeric.
Oh, turmeric.
It's the
okay.
yellow stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the yellow stuff in curry. It's not the same as cumin. The curcumin is the active component in turmeric. And that helps to suppress infection from a lot of different viruses, RSV, hepatitis C, influenza, etc. And it's also antibacterial too. Now, one thing to note about turmeric is that in Chinese medicine and in Ayurveda, it's a warming herb. So if you're taking it as an anti-inflammatory for your joints, for example, only use it if your joints need warming. If your joints actually feel better when you put a cold compress on them, don't add turmeric to your system. And turmeric is also, it doesn't get absorbed very well across the digestive system wall. So if you're going to take it for joint pain or you want kind of a whole body anti-inflammatory response, you need to add some pepper with it. Don't how just much, take it by itself.
How much turmeric would you need to take for it to actually help you? Are we talking like, you know, when I cook with turmeric, I'm cooking for the whole family and I only use half a teaspoon in the thing I made last night. Is that actually enough to have an impact?
It is if you're using it frequently.
Oh, okay.
So there's a dose response curve. And the way that we establish that with pharmaceutical medicines is that we give everybody, say, 100 milligrams, and we kind of see how many people have X, Y, or Z amount in their bloodstream. Well, there's no real turmeric pharmaceutical company out there. So they're not doing those same dose response curves. So the level that you need for cooking spices is a little bit different than what you need for having some kind of therapeutic effect. And for that, I don't think that there's just one number because it depends on what pharmaceutical medicines you're taking it for. Are you taking it for some of your digestion and also as broad-based anti-inflammatory? So I'm not comfortable giving just like a number for everybody. Because I don't think that's fair. Yeah.
Right. And yeah. if we wanted to, yeah. is there who in our lives that we consult? Like, would we need to go to a traditional Chinese medicine person like you? Who would know something like this to help us?
Yeah, great question. Naturopathic doctors. So naturopathic is the way that's spelled as opposed to napropathic. Those folks are just phenomenal herbalists. They know about Eastern herbs, they know about Western herbs, and they know a lot about those dose kinds of components, those dose kinds of questions for various different problems. Mm-hmm. So ND is the abbreviation behind their name, mm-hmm. and that's what I would recommend. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Sure. Some other foods that are really, really helpful in the fall that a lot of us cook with all the time are onions and garlic. They are so broadly antimicrobial and they have widespread health benefits. And most people know them about cholesterol or know about them in the context of cholesterol and high blood pressure and all that kind of thing. But people don't necessarily think about onions and garlic helping to ward off pathogens that are trying to invade as, you know, as respiratory problems. So those are other just really, really good ones.
And if we cook those, are they still powerful or do they need to be eaten mm-hmm. raw?
No, they do not need to be eaten raw. They're still quite powerful.
Nice. Yeah.
And the last thing I did want to share with your listeners is a little recipe for electrolytes. Because
oh,
a lot of people, whenever
second.
They start, yeah, I'm going to put, we'll put this in the show notes too.
So Dr. Sina, you were promising to tell us about an electrolyte recipe for the fall. So give us the scoop.
Yeah, what I really don't like about Pedialyte and Gatorade and a lot of those other things that people drink for electrolytes is that they're full of sugar and they're full of a lot of chemicals that then your body is being forced to detox at the same time as you're trying to fight an infection and detox from the infection. So this is very, very simple. It's easy to make, and almost everybody has these ingredients already at their house. So if you or people that you're taking care of develop a fever, this is what I would recommend for replacing those electrolytes that you lose when you're sweating or when you have a fever or you're having, you know, digestive upset and lots of runny noses and stuff. So you take a quart of water and then you put in a half teaspoon of salt, a half teaspoon of baking soda, and 2 to 3 tablespoons of honey. Honey is another amazing antimicrobial medicine, and it's very, very helpful for sore throats, and there's a lot of medical research out there about it. And then add a juice from half of a lemon, and you just mix all of that together. So the honey and lemon together do fabulous things for your throat and for getting rid of bacteria and viruses and so forth. And then you've got the baking soda and the salt, adding in the electrolytes that you need to replace whenever you're losing a lot of fluids. And little people and people that are very sensitive to flavors won't be able to taste that baking soda or that salt. It just kind of tastes like honey lemon water. And you can take that either cold or warm, whatever feels better to your throat. And it's really easy to just keep in the refrigerator and use after a workout if you're into that kind of thing, or in replacement of Gatorade and Pedialyte and so forth.
Wow, I love that. You're right. I do have all those ingredients in my house. That's awesome. And honey, any kind of honey, raw honey better? Tell me about that.
So in little ones, you don't want to use honey at all because it has a risk of botulinum toxin in it. And so you don't want to overwhelm a small child's system with honey. But for anybody else, anybody that's over, let's say, 1 year of age, or to be really safe, 2 years of age, honey is completely safe in all of its forms. Manuka honey is widely kind of regarded as being the best, in quotes, for colds and flus because it has a lot of antimicrobial properties. But honey overall it works well. So you don't have to stress, especially when you're sick and you're already distracted with all kinds of other things. Don't worry about running out and getting Manuka honey as opposed to the honey that you're using in your tea every day. That's the other really great thing actually about this electrolyte blend is you can mix it with all kinds of herbal teas. So you're getting your electrolytes and you're getting a little bit more flavor and the healing properties of a cold and flu time tea or a licorice tea or a chamomile tea or a lemon balm tea. And so you really can create a lot of variety for yourself that way.
Thank you. That's a beautiful suggestion. Wow. So this has been so helpful. I feel so validated about my sadness. As opposed to apologetic.
Perfect harmony with the universe.
And exactly. I am in time. There's some really crappy stuff going on in the world. I need to cry. And if you are out there, please cry as soon as possible. You know, doing whatever you need to do. If it's a movie, that's fine. And Dr. Sina, is there anything that you want to leave people with, a final message? And also be sure to tell us how to stay in touch with you.
Absolutely. Thank you. Chicago Healing Center is my primary website. I'm in the process of building out sinasmithmd.com. So my first name is S-I-N-A and then smithmd.com. That will have a lot more information about speaking engagements and podcasts that I'm on. And I'm currently writing a book that should be finished. The first draft should be finished by the end of next week and in the hands of an editor. So I'm looking for it to be published by the end of the year. And then I've got a couple more books that are in the works. Yeah, we're working on cover design and stuff like that right now. So it's coming along really quickly and should be out by the end of the year.
Do you want to give us a teaser and tell us what the book is about or the title? Just
sure.
Like a 20-second teaser?
Sure. It's called It's called Understanding Acupuncture, and it's a short question and answer kind of book about all the questions that I get asked all the time about, well, what exactly is this? How does it work? Is it placebo? Where are you putting the needles? Why are you putting the needles there? Do the needles hurt? You know, all of those kinds of questions. So it's meant to be just kind of a short reference to make people feel comfortable about the kinds of things that they maybe wouldn't ask a practitioner, but that they are comfortable asking somebody in the elevator.
Right. Yeah. And if you're already at the practitioner's office, then you've already in some way gotten over the fear or the misinformation. So this is a great tool. My in-laws, I think, will love it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. And so you in said the spring, Sina. I'm going to be...
I just want to make sure everyone knows that that's S. S as in Sam. Sina Smith, MD.com?
Yes.
Okay. And it'll be in the show notes.
It'll be in the show notes as well. Yes. Yes. And so I am going to be starting, a community in the spring, but it's maybe a little too soon to talk about that verbally right now, but we'll put something in the show notes if I can get that done by the time you post this. It's a very fresh idea that just came up last week, and I'm trying to just kind of be with it and do my fall thing as opposed to launching a thing. So I don't have it teased out 100% yet.
Beautiful. I love how you're practicing your own medicine. You know, beautiful idea has come, but you know, wrap up what needs to be wrapped up, like your book, stay in the fall mode of things. I see.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So this will probably be the first of the year, January, February, something along those lines. Mm-hmm. But it's intended to be an online wellness community with recipes with why would you use this particular food at this particular time of year? And here are some recipes to do it. Here are here's some information about a nutraceutical, or like we were just talking about turmeric. What is it? What is it doing? Why do you take it with pepper versus not pepper? You know, there's just so much misunderstanding out there. And I would like to be able to give more information back to people that they can rely on, and then also create a community where people can have conversations about it.
Perfect. So we started about collaboration and, you know, being heard, and we've come back to that again.
Exactly. So, yes.
Thank you for being with us today. I look forward to your next appearance in the Mother Tree community and wish you all the best for the book.
Thank you so much, Aminata. I really, really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you again. You're just such a delight and a joy to my soul. So thank you for lifting me up today.
All right, y'all. Take care. So thank you for staying for the entire conversation. Remember, the Mother Tree Network and the Mother Tree community is here to support you and empower you on your healing journey in all of your efforts to expand your consciousness, to do the good, vital, important work on the spiritual plane, on the energetic plane. We are right there with you. So I want you to remember to leave us some stars or a review, and to come into the community. Come check us out. You can just go to my website, dramandakemp.com, and you'll find out more information about the Mother Tree community. Until the next time, gorgeous, be good, be grounded, and give yourself a hug.